Today, I've got a young man with me attempting to make his way in the world of broadcasting. He's a beneficiary of the BBC non-graduate training programme, which is available to aspiring broadcasters from disadvantaged backgrounds, of course. He is from Limerick. Mr. Terence Wogan, good morning, Terry. How are you?
A very, very good morning to you, Jerry. I was wondering if there were any opportunities. Could I tread on the tail of a coat or possibly...
I believe you have time on your hands.
I could have brought you a little bit of my Ulster fry that I got for breakfast in the honeymoon suite of the Green On Hotel in Speenogue last night.
A place unknown to me, I have to say.
Ah,
but I believe it's very, very good.
You could have joined me in the jacuzzi, which is just beside the bed.
I draw the line there.
Ah, come on.
Listen, one
Some
of the things
friend
I said
you are.
During the course of the introduction, I mentioned that you're on the non-graduate school. Not strictly correct, because last week you became a doctor.
But this is nothing new to me, Jerry. For lesser mortals like yourself, I expect it's something to aspire to. But I've been a doctor twice.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
So if you really want to show a bit of manners, it's Doctor, Doctor, Sir, Terry.
Doctor, Doctor, Sir, Terry.
Or possibly Doctor, Sir, Doctor, Terry.
Or indeed, Sir, Doctor, Doctor.
Because I have a doctorate in literature from the University of Limerick. And
I think there may be some favouritism there.
And one in the laws from the University of Leicester. And let me tell you, there's nothing more embarrassing than standing up while somebody delivers a panegyric about you in front of a whole load of people who have been studying for years.
Yes.
Years on end to become doctors. And then you get up and get an honorary doctorate for nothing. And the thing that always amused me about the Republic was that I think it was a man called Todd Andrews who started this. He got an honorary doctorate and insisted on being called Dr. Todd Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And so from then on, if you get an honorary doctorate in Ireland, you're called Doctor. Now, I won't insist.
I didn't know that. So there's hope for me yet.
Very little.
No, people in the south of Ireland can be called doctor and insist on being called doctor if they're honorary doctors.
Yes, exactly, which is ridiculous. It's the same thing in Italy, you know. You have dottores are all over the place. And commendatores.
But what about sir? Will they call you Sir Terry across the border? No.
I should hope so. For goodness sake, you know, why did the Queen go to all that trouble? I'm not going to have Her Majesty flaunted in this way. And anyway, as I say, I always apply Sir Michael Caine's great rule, which is he doesn't insist that people call him Sir, but if anybody writes a letter to him addressed to Mr. Michael Caine, it goes straight into the wastepaper basket.
But one of the things, too, about that, if you get an honorary doctorate, you have to sit, as you say, listen to the panegyric, but you also have to wear a funny hat while you're doing it.
Oh, you have. But
you feel ridiculous.
The University of Limerick allowed me to keep my titfa and my cloak.
Yeah.
And I have it in a glass case, and I throw sugar at it every so often.
Ermine?
At home, of course. No, that comes a little later. That hasn't happened yet, but I'm always hopeful.
Ferret?
But Leicester took the cape and the cap away from me, said, sorry, that's for the next fellow.
The next fellow, probably Jimmy Nesbitt or somebody.
Or some other distinguished tragedian.
But there is indeed a suspicion that perhaps some of these honorary doctors are going to people just because they're well-known, of course. There's no truth in
that. Where did that disgraceful and appalling rumour start? Well, discount that immediately.
Listen, never mind your honours. I'm jealous because I've never had any. Although I wait, the Queen seems to have ignored me for some strange reason. It's because I live too far away.
No, I sat and had lunch with her lately and she said, do you know Gerry Anderson?
She does, indeed.
And I said, yes, I do. And she said, I can't stand the sight of him.
Well, she met me once. I put my arm around her and I said, I better stop doing that. I think the last person who did that lost his job, the Prime Minister of Australia. And she said, yes, as a matter of fact, I remember that.
Yeah. And she said to me, no, he put his arm around me.
He tried it on, your mate.
She said, who does he think he is?
My husband and I are most upset.
Terry, what are you doing in our fair country?
I can't tell you that. If I told you that, I'd have to shoot you.
I'll tell them what you're doing.
No, what I'm doing is a documentary. And I hate talking about stuff like that because you never know how it's going to turn out. And I love doing it. It's the antithesis of everything that I do. Everything I've ever done on radio and television as I've grown older and lazier is done off the cuff. I make it up as I go along. I open up the microphone like yourself without an idea what's in me, what I'm going
exactly
to say. And that's part of what we do. And so I don't rehearse. I mean, I do. I'm the only person on Weekend Wogan, the live music show I do on a Sunday on BBC Two from 11 to 1.
Yes.
I'm the only person who doesn't turn up for rehearsals. So I get there about half ten and start the programme in front of the audience. That's the way I like to do it.
There are people who are listening who don't believe that. They think you're joking, but I know you're telling the truth.
No, it is the truth. And that's why doing this is the antithesis of everything I've ever done, because filming, making documentaries, is an unutterably tedious job. You're doing things three and four times because, of course, cameramen and sound men who are near me now are bungling usually and say, oh, didn't get that. Sound man goes, oh, hair in the gate. All the usual excuse. Oh, missed that one. Oh, we better try a wide shot. All that kind of thing.
Can you do that spontaneous thing again? But also, but you did a series like this before, but it was only for Northern Ireland, wasn't it? This is a network thing.
No, no, it wasn't for Northern Ireland. It was.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I don't remember my
memory. It was transmitted. It was called Wogan's Island. But you know the way you think, oh, that was about 5 years ago, and it was probably about 20 years ago. So this is just Wogan's Island. And, of course, Wogan's Island of my past it remains the same, but Ireland is a completely different place than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky in a sense that I'm coming to Ireland when it's in a period of transition, change, mm-hmm. Depression, you might say,
yeah.
and following the enormous success of the Celtic Tiger. And what I'm doing is 2 one-hour documentaries for BBC One. And it's just going to be my take on Ireland, my interpretation of the difference between the British and the Irish, mm-hmm. what makes us different, what we understand about each other, what we don't understand about each other. And, of course, if the commentary and the comments are rubbish, which they almost certainly will be,
of course,
the scenery is lovely.
You were lucky you got your money out before the crash. Weren't you?
I didn't have any money in Ireland.
I wasn't
that big in Egypt. Come on.
No, but
anyway, all the Irish had their money in England.
But are you enjoying this? Where have you been so far?
We started, we came off the old hydrofoil. Which, of course, only travels between Holyhead and Dunleary, or Dunlacare.
Yes, that's it.
Dunlacare, when the weather is clement. Uh-huh. Luckily, we were a bit of clement, and then we hit sea fog in the middle, and we had to stop. Mm-hmm. But eventually we got to Dunleary. Then we came down, did a bit in Dublin, came down to where my father was born in Enniskerry in Wicklow.
Oh, yeah.
And with Powers Court and all those places. We then travelled on down to Cork, went to various pubs, met various people, went to Cove, obviously,
yeah.
Very much part of our history, our tragic history, sure. If you like, and then around and up to Kerry and Killarney.
Mm-hmm.
Not a place I'd recommend to you. Anyway, Killarney.
Why not? Killarney, of course, why not? Beautiful place.
It's beautiful, yes. But there's more huge hotels in Killarney than you can shake a stick at.
It's pretty
and
bad.
A lot of them, I'm afraid, in the present circumstances, are empty. So we go up there and then we end up in Limerick. Now, the sun is splitting the paving stones all over these islands. My wife is complaining back home every time I phone her about the appalling heat. And I walk into Limerick and I might as well have walked into Angela's ashes. The rain is lashing down. And so it was appropriate. Because I was born in the rain in Limerick. I was born with catarrh, which made me the broadcaster I am, because it talked through my nose.
Exactly.
And so we come through Limerick, and then this week we made our way up to Galway and Sligo.
I believe there were naked women in Sligo.
Yeah, but I'm afraid...
I believe you were surrounded by them.
You do know that nudity, public nudity, is illegal in Ireland.
Well, not yesterday, apparently.
Well, no, because the Garda Síochána turn a blind eye to it. And in fact, encourage it. But, yeah, they did. They do it for breast cancer research, obviously.
Okay,
they're tremendously brave, wonderful women, and a lot of them suffering from exactly
kind of a calendar girl thing.
What they're trying to fight, yeah. They've done a calendar girl thing. They're doing a book this year, and then they had this dip in the nip where they 200 of them darted in to the Atlantic Ocean, and they gave me a rerun, because I announced it from London. I announced the dive, 3, 2, 1, all my audience, and in they dashed into the sea. But they did a little, as it were, rerun for me this time. And I was prepared to watch them run into the sea, but quite frankly, I retired before they ran out.
I think you did the right thing.
I'm delicately brought up.
I know. I don't like women when they're naked and blue. I must say one thing to Terry before you go. When you left the morning show on Radio 2, were you surprised at the incredible wave of emotion that covered the entire place? I mean, I'd never seen anything like that.
I would have expected no less. What are you talking about, Jerry? To be the same thing
I was
here.
Surprised. When, I said, it's only Wogan, for God's sake.
When they drag you out of here, you'll be surprised at the number of people who couldn't care less.
There was a man trying to get in here with a tranquilizer dart the other day, but I got him stopped.
No, I mean, I left because I thought, you know, I'd become familiar to everybody. It's like an old kettle or, a piece of wallpaper on the kitchen. It's been there for hundreds of years. And I just felt... There's a time to live and a time to die. There's a time to make for the exit before somebody starts to lead you to it. I could, of course, have continued on because there were no indicators that anybody was fed up with me or anything. But I've always tended to leave parties before everybody else.
That's only because nobody fancies you.
Terry, no mates.
Well, Terry, it's lovely to see you.
You too. How good to see you again, my friend.
Oh, no, it's good. And look at how young we look.
Do you know, I feel I'm looking at a kind of mirrored image. But do you know another thing? The mirror never tells the truth. Otherwise, would you see so many Egypts walking the streets looking the way they did?
I know. Listen, one thing you said disturbed me. You knew when to go. How come I don't know?
I'll ring you and tell you. What about now?